Hello and welcome to Cambridge Libraries of the World podcast. I'm Hadin Dour from the Library Marketing team here at Cambridge University Press. Joining me on today's episode on EBA stories around the world is Zoe Hurley from University of Bath and Nathabiseng Monyes all the way from the University of Johannesburg in South Africa. A huge welcome to you both, and thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Hadi. Thanks very much.
Hi, Hadi. It's great to be here.
Today's episode is going to be a little different from previous episodes, as we're going to be looking at and discussing some of our EBA stories from institutions we work with. For higher education, as well as many other sectors, data is becoming central to what we do and the decisions we make. EBA, or evidence-based acquisition, is a simple and cost-effective way of acquiring ebooks based on usage data provided by Cambridge. So today, we will look at some of the experiences of our EBA customers and their journey so far in working with Cambridge. So to kick things off, I'm going to start with you, Zoe. Please share your EBA story with us. When did you start your EBA with Cambridge? And what did that initial usage data show you?
Okay, well, I first got interested in the EBA, gosh, as far back as about 2018, I think, when my Cambridge rep, Natalie, was talking about it in one of our routine meetings. And she explained that if I was interested, back in the kind of pre-COVID days, they used to host an EBA day at the University Press. If I wanted to know more, I could go to that. So I did. I think that was about September 2019. I hopped on a train and went to the University Press, which was kind of amazing because I'd never been there before. And the day was really good. It was really informative and useful. And there were lots of librarians there from libraries that were using the EBA and like me, people that weren't. And we kind of just did a lot of work. And everybody that did have the EBA, you know, spoke in glowing terms about it. and I was a little suspicious. I was like, well, if they put that much money into it, they're not going to kind of slate it, are they? But then I remembered what librarians are like and knew that wasn't going to be the case. So, I mean, the thing that I found was because the University of Bath doesn't offer a full range of subjects, and we're not necessarily the type of university that has 60 grand plus to spend on a full year of a full EBA. What really interested me in particular was the single subject EBAs, and they were quite new at the time. So although I was at that day, nobody could speak about the subject specific EBA because nobody had it. But it kind of planted a seed for me. And, you know, I thought about it. I took all the promotional material and everything back and disseminated it around our subject librarians. And although I was pretty keen, I didn't get much feedback at that time. And it was only a couple of months later when I was doing a physics bib checking reading list, and I realised that our subject librarian for physics was ordering about £2,000 worth of Cambridge Core ebooks. And I just thought, you know, that's quite a substantial bit towards, you know, the outlay for an EBA. So I went back to our subject librarian, Karina, and, you know, reminded her. And that kind of set the wheels in motion at that point. So I contacted Natalie and she gave us some more tailored usage details. And we decided in December 2019 to go with the subject-specific physics EBA. And we worked with Lawrence, who's our subject librarian, who helped with the deduping of titles and the ingestion of all the MARC records into the catalogue. And then the EBA started on the 1st of February 2020. And little did we know what that year was then what was going to happen with the rest of that year. So it ran very smoothly, very quietly. You know, we got the monthly MARC records to ingest as the titles became available, and we received quarterly usage stats so we could see. And you know, I changed roles just before the end of the year. So with regards to stats, the latest stats I had was from the February to the December. And I think we had almost 6,000 uses of about 400 separate titles. And if we'd paid individually for those titles, it would have cost us more than, I think, £55,000. So that's the kind of value for money that you get, I guess. At the end, Karina selected the titles she wanted to keep in perpetuity. So that was to the value of the initial $7,200 upfront fee. I think that was about 46 titles. But it meant in that year, you know, of all years, that the users had access to 332 titles they wouldn't have been able to use otherwise, and use them about 3,000 times, I think. And we acquired in perpetuity the titles that, you know, we knew were popular. Interestingly, of the 9 original titles from that reading list that kicked us all into it, only 4 of them would have made the cut on high usage. So that was interesting from a kind of librarian's point of view, regarding reading lists and how we might acquire material in the future. And I guess the only other thing I had to say was that my fear really was that when the year finished, there would be kind of outcry when we withdrew the titles that we didn't buy in perpetuity. But that was actually unfounded in reality. We had a couple of complaints and we made a couple of extra purchases. But when all the titles were fully removed from our catalogue, you know, it just settled down again. So that was also really positive.
Thank you so much, Zoe, for a very, very detailed answer. It's really good to hear that you attended the EBA day and that was beneficial to you, and of course how you're using that data to make your decisions. And now, Nathabasing, thank you again for joining us all the way from South Africa. Please take us through your EBA journey and how this way of buying ebooks is supporting learning at the University of Johannesburg.
Okay. We started with a Cambridge EBA in 2019. It was pitched to us around 2018. And then we were also looking at other EBAs and nothing really made sense to us. But then when this one was pitched after a good 2 years of evaluating different programs, that we never really got what we needed. And then Ashley, our rep, came and introduced this one, the Cambridge, to us. And it was the very first one that got us really, really excited. The thought of having access to almost the whole catalogue of Cambridge. That's like over 30,000 ebooks without actually paying for the whole thing. It just hit home. So we took advantage of that opportunity and we're very excited about the usage at the end of the borrowed access term. I think our term finishes, around February. Yeah, and then when we saw the statistics, we were like, wow. And as my colleague here is saying, that the usage, the titles that we wanted to keep in perpetuity was actually more than the price that we paid, because the usage was just so high. You know, we didn't know what to choose, what to leave. Everyone wanted a piece of everything. but we had to choose up to a certain amount. And then that's when we continued with the EBA, seeing that, like, everyone is in love with it. Everyone is using this. So this way of buying is truly amazing, as everyone from any faculty anyway is able to find something on the platform to support their learning, their research, their teaching. So even though I'm leaving University of Johannesburg, I do not think that they will leave the Cambridge EBA, never, until we get all the titles in our catalogue through the EBA.
Thank you, Nathabasing. That's great to hear. Now, I know that for both of you, it's coming to the end of term at your universities. And although we have seen much improvement in education in the last 3 or 4 months, the reality is that learning has been severely disrupted. So with that in mind, please give us a sense of where you are as we enter another year of uncertainty in terms of the pandemic. Zoe, would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. The University of Bath has returned to in-person teaching now. So we have got students back on the campus and it is busy and the library is, you know, full. People like to still come and sit and use the library. And that's the way that our university has chosen to go at the moment. Obviously, you know, pending any future changes, we can flip back to you know, the online teaching if necessary. But I think the focus on e-resources is still there, regardless of the fact that people are now back on campus. You know, the e-books are still being hit really hard. And I don't think the print purchase is ever going to go back to pre-pandemic levels. People are just so familiar now with the e-resources, and the students that are coming up through education, you know, are so familiar with them. So although it's kind of business as usual, I'm not sure it's ever going to be the usual that we remembered again.
Absolutely. I agree with you completely. I think a key point, you know, you've made there is that e-learning and resources are still necessary and still needed. And Nathabisen, what about you? What is the situation like in South Africa?
Okay, up here, the situation has really come down. We are currently on lockdown level one since the beginning of October. And here we are back at full working full time, 100%, but the students are not yet back physically on campus. So they're still doing their learning online. Some are here because they are busy with the final exams now. They are coming in and out. Some are doing their exams online. So we are hoping that by the beginning of next year, things will get back to normal as more people get vaccines and the stats are drastically going down. The hope is that by next year, things will come down and then things will go back to normal. But as Zoe is saying, really, I don't see us going back to print, buying print stuff. I think we will continue, definitely we will continue with buying electronic resources, electronic textbooks, everything electronic because everyone has gotten used to that already.
I think that is so interesting but refreshing also to hear Nathabisen, because I know that this way of learning, you know, online learning is something that, correct me if I'm wrong, but many countries in the African continent are only just beginning to kind of grapple with. So how has that transition been for you and also for the students?
Well, here at the University of Johannesburg, I think we've started way back with the electronic, studying electronic resources. And because since 2014, 2015, the requirement for the students, the first year students to come in was for them to have a device, a laptop, an iPad or something. Because most of the things that the library bought and most of the what the lecturers are doing it was actually online ever since then. So with this pandemic, it just came in, and we were ready. It was like we were ready for it. Yeah, the University of Johannesburg, because we had so many electronic resources. The students were very comfortable in using them. Yeah, so I think we were far ahead compared to the other African countries. So everyone has access to data. The university buys data for the students. The university, those that cannot afford to have devices, the university buys for them the devices.
Thank you, Nathanasing. And also very quickly before we move back to our discussion, I know Zoe talked about attending EBA days. I know this isn't always possible for our customers in other parts of the world. Have you been to one before, virtually or otherwise?
No, we haven't attended the open day at all. We just got presentations from Ashley, our representative, but we never really attended the EBA open day.
But do you see that there would be benefit behind attending it?
I think they would. I think they would. And I think I should actually suggest it to my managers and to my colleagues to say, above knowing what we know, I think this is more valuable. If you could attend this, we would know even more than we know, right? You know, now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, Nathanasing. Now I'm going to bring the discussion back to your relationship with Cambridge. So once you sign up to an EBA and you have access to, I think it's something like 42,000 ebooks now from Cambridge and our publishing partners, what happens next from your end? I know from my end in the marketing team, we work with you to ensure that access to the books is communicated at your universities. But it would be, I think, really useful to know what happens on your side once you have access. Zoe, would you like to go first?
From our point of view, it was just working with the subject librarian to ensure that the right promotional materials went out to her department. Librarian and our colleagues, you know, at your side, to make sure that that technical process of the deduping and ingestion of MARC records worked. You know, and that just took a little bit of time to sort out before we kind of went live with it. That's kind of what we were doing our end, I think. But it was very simple, you know, it did all fall into place really well. It wasn't nearly as much work as I'd anticipated, personally. I'm not sure Lawrence, the systems librarian, would agree. But
thank you, Zoe. That's good to hear. And Nathanasing, you know, would you like to share what the process looks like for you?
Okay, yeah. In our case, we do receive the Excel file of all the titles in our full EBA collection. And then once a month, we receive the MARC records and the title list, corresponding title list, and the MARC records have been uploaded on the catalog. At the end of the EBA, we go through the usage stats as we would receive and select the well-used titles for perpetual access. Yeah, I feel that, yeah, this works really well for us.
You know, what else would you say has worked really well for you with EBAs? I know, you know, you've mentioned a couple of things, EBA days, kind of having that data provided for you. But what else has worked really well for you in this process? Nathanasing.
Yeah. I would say knowing that the fact that whatever you are buying is definitely going to be used. That's the best thing, because normally we just buy hoping that this should be used, this will be used. But with the EBA, when going perpetually, we already know that this has been used so many times. There is just no way that it cannot be used after we buy it. So that alone is, considering the budgets that we get in our universities, we don't want to spend money and not get the benefit of the value out of that. So that works really well.
Thank you. And then I guess on the flip side of that, what hasn't worked well for you?
I have never thought of that.
That's good. That's good for us.
I have never thought of anything that didn't work, especially with this Cambridge EBA. Honestly, I don't want to know.
That's brilliant.
No.
Right, that's going up on our website. That's brilliant. Thank you, Nathanasing. Zoe, what about you?
Well, positives. I mean, I guess it was just the broad scope that you get while you're having it, even with us, you know, the single subject EBA, you suddenly have all those books. So it did broaden our scope for, you know, research, and it facilitated investigation and exploration, which might not have been possible, you know, otherwise. So it did give us that breadth for the year. And I guess the negative, well, as I said, I was worried about it ending, and it would have been absolutely fine if we'd been just a bit quicker our end at removing the records from our catalogue. So we did get some questions, we did get some broken links, but that was entirely our end, I think. And we dealt with them, and Cambridge benefited because we got a few extra titles as well. But no, it was a very positive experience, I think.
Thank you, Zoe. That's good to hear. Now, aside from EBAs, are you signed up to any other publishing or purchasing models with Cambridge, Zoe?
No, I don't think so. We've got those. I don't know if there's going to be another question, but we have undertaken another couple of the single subject EBAs with you, because, you know, it did go well and our subject librarian was very pleased. So we are currently undertaking the EBA with physics and astronomy subjects and with computing science and mathematics, I think. And those are the two that we've got running at the moment. And then we do order core books all the time, you know, in the different subjects, just through our normal supplier.
I think that's great to hear. It's good to know that, you know, you're both signed up to this model and it is fulfilling, I guess, the needs of your institutions as well as the students. So we now have a few minutes left before we move to the final part of this discussion. And I just wanted to give you both an opportunity to share any key issues that are important to you. I think this wouldn't be a customer-focused episode if we didn't ask that. So what are your priorities for the coming term and academic years ahead? Nathada Singh, would you like to go first?
On our side, we now focusing more on doing electronic textbooks, more specifically electronic textbooks, because firstly, they are very expensive for the students to buy for themselves. And secondly, since we are now doing everything online, it's very important for the library to have access to these textbooks so that the students can have easy access and not struggle to find their learning material. So we haven't focused that much on the textbooks in the previous years, but since the beginning of this lockdown and the pandemic, that's where our focus will be now going forward.
And Zoe, same question to you. Key priorities for the years ahead?
Yes, well, our key priority as ever is just ensuring that we have what's needed when it's needed. And, you know, we have reading lists, we have, you know, processes in place to hopefully ensure that does work. E-textbooks have been proving a problem, so I agree there that's a concern for the future for us, I think.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. It's really good to hear what has worked well for you, you know, in your EBA journey, the number of titles you have access to, the data, that value for money, and also nice to hear that collaboration between yourselves and Cambridge. Okay, so we will now move to the final part of the discussion where we look at improving libraries around the world, where I'll ask you both for any changes you would like to make in academic publishing. So Zoe, if you could make one change within academic publishing, what would it be?
Okay, let rip on the e-textbooks, I think. I mean, I think e-textbooks have always been a bugbear for librarians, you know. I know the models are changing, but typically that kind of per named student approach that VitalSource and Cortex used to, offer back in the day was problematic as a librarian. And, we want institutional licenses, you know, and we're willing to pay for them, but perhaps not as much as some publishers think that we're willing to pay for them. So I think it's just, and it was just exacerbated, and it became, you know, very high profile, didn't it, during lockdown, the fact that the publishers so generously offered us everything for free. And the librarians at the time, I think, were thinking, yeah, right, when is this penny going to drop? And it dropped about June 2020, as I recall, and then they all started charging quite a lot of money. So I think, you know, this is the territory. We need a clear definition of what an e-book, e-textbook is, you know, rather than just what the publisher thinks is selling particularly well at the time. And we need fair and kind of robust institutional licenses, you know, and consistency across publishers in terms of digital rights as well. These are the things that, you know, librarians are really kind of crying out for, you know, to offer the best that we can offer. Yeah,
I couldn't agree more. Thank you. And Athaba Singh, how about you? What change would you make?
If academic publishing could support open access publishing by making it part of the subscriptions. I know a few has already gone that route to include the open access publishing in there, but not everyone has gone that route yet. So open access, it's getting really important in institutions, because currently what we're doing now is we are part of the library budgets, we are assisting to pay for the publishing fees, for the open access publishing fees for our academics. So if that can be incorporated in licenses, that would be much better for us.
Thank you, Athaba Singh. I agree with you completely on that. I know that at Cambridge we have a number of open access initiatives running, and kind of a pilot model as well that we're running at the moment. So perhaps something you can speak to Ashley about.
Yes, I will definitely do that.
So thank you both for your fantastic insights. And to everyone listening, what are your thoughts? What change would you make? We want to hear your opinions. Please join in the discussion by tweeting us using our podcast hashtag Libraries of the World. We'll use your answers to help inform our review episode at the end of the season, where we'll discuss all of the insights from this podcast. And that's it for today's episode on EBA Stories Around the World. We hope you've learned something new and we've given you some food for thought. We'll add a link to our EBA webpage when this episode is published. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Cambridge UP Live, all one word, to keep up to date with all of our episodes and everything to do with libraries. A huge thank you again to our special guests, Zoe Hurley and Athaba Singh Monyes. I appreciate your time and contributions.
Oh, thank you, Hadi. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to voice my opinion on this topic that's so close to my heart. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, both. It's been great hearing from you.